when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, a podcast where we talk about the culture we love, society can sometimes make us feel bad about. My name is Caroline O'Donoghue, and how dare you say that my behaviour is unacceptable? Joining me is author, features director of Cosmopolitan, and I shiver when I hear her name, Katrina Innes.
Ah, that was really good. I was wondering what you were going to do. That's really exciting.
I mean, there's so much to choose yeah. from. I thought about Everyone Has a Secret.
Oh, very good, yeah.
And the city's getting crazy and we must get out.
She does not walk, she runs instead.
She does not walk, she runs instead.
Instead.
So today we're talking about the 2003 album, Maroon 5's Songs About Jane. This is not an album that I revisit a lot. However, I think in terms of my own musical coming of age, it's probably the most important album of my young life.
I would agree. I mean, I also listen to it all the time.
Like
all the time. I love it. When I was Googling how long ago it was out, I was like, I think I've listened to that album every year for the past 19 years or whenever it came out. It was like 18, 19 years ago.
It's funny for an album that at the time it came out, it was really sort of dismissed as being many things, sort of like too pretty, too polished, too boy band, too sort of, you know, cynically for a horny teenage girl mm-hmm. audience. The one thing you cannot come for with Songs About Jane is the absolute musicianship. And I think it's because of that musicianship, it really holds up.
Yeah, I mean, I also am such a lyric obsessive.
Yeah.
And I just love that it's all about this one woman and I love to analyse all those lyrics. And that's kind of what's kept me going all these years is just thinking about that love story and admittedly just putting myself right into that love story. Like, I learned that there's people that do fan fiction about that love story. Like, it's really captured the hearts of, well, a small number of people.
I would think a huge number of yeah. people. And I honestly think that there are many very clever things that Maroon 5 did that made it so they weren't just a band. They became like a huge sensation. And I think the smartest of all was calling the album Songs About Jane.
So clever, yeah.
Because first of all, it's this thing of like everybody, it's the most normal Jane. It's like mm-hmm. a Jane Doe or whatever. But so it could be about anyone. And there's no descriptions within the album of how she looks, how she acts. She's a sort of the whole relationship is sort of a blank canvas. And that blank canvas also looks like Adam Levine.
Yeah.
And so the idea that Jane, all these horny mm-hmm. songs, because it is essentially an album about sex and desire, could be about any girl and therefore could be about you.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it's about me, I think.
No, I think you're wrong because it's about me.
And Jane is just somewhere listening being like, it's about me, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really think, and I look back on my relationships, because I came out of... basically, no one fancied me in high school. I was the girl that boys literally left Spin the Bottle if I was playing.
Katrina.
And then this album came out when I was 17, so I was kind of starting to pull boys. And I realised looking back, I was so intense in my relationships because this set the kind of like blueprint for how boys feel about women and how they write about women. And for me, yeah. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get someone to be this obsessed with me. Like,
this is it.
And I was thinking back, there was a boy that I had a crush on and I used to phone him every night. And I am convinced that he said to me, you can call me anytime you want. But that was Adam Levine. I don't think that man ever said that to me.
And in fact, he did not exist. He was but a projected figment
of my own. Adam Levine. Yeah. Like, I look back, oh, I'm really sorry. I thought you were that into me, but it wasn't. It was just I listened to this album so much. It became my own love story.
I feel very... So the a couple of years between us, but we're of the same sort of generation. I was 13 when it came out. And I think what was especially special about this album for me was it was a very much a cruising through the music channels very late at night on my own. And then the Harder to Breathe video coming up. And it being sort of everything I liked about music, that sort of thing that it's guitar-led and it sounds edgy, but to me at 13, but, you know... In retrospect, not really that edgy at all, quite slick, quite produced. But the sort of the clanging of it, that whole thing of it, and just his face and how he acted in the video and all of that. And it was the first time I had ever discovered something for myself. And then I went to all the music shops in Cork and nobody had heard of them. I don't think the album was even out yet. So I was 13, so it came out in 2003. And then going back every single week to see if it was out. And then finally one day it was, and there was two copies, and then slowly the album taking off and then it being, you know, unmissable, it being everywhere, She Will Be Loved being on every radio station. And it felt like the first time I was like, oh, my finger's on the pulse.
That's exactly, I felt exactly the same. I remember just being like, I am so cool. I mean, I went from like Steps Gold album to this album. So I was like, I'm really cool. I'm an indie chick.
Like,
I know this cool album. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're Maroon 5. When actually I did discover them.
Because, on a music channel.
On a music channel. And because they're in the Love Actually soundtrack.
That is so funny. I remember all the other bands that I loved. I got exclusively off the like Spider-Man soundtracks or the Shrek soundtracks.
Yeah, the soundtracks are a really good gateway to finding.
They really were back then when like you didn't really have any proper internet and all that, and finding like Rufus Wainwright in Shrek 2 and Matchbox 20 on Spider-Man 2. Sequels, a good time for soundtracks. But then I remember that feeling of being a cool indie chick who discovers bands all by herself. Flipped on me so quickly.
It really did.
Because I'd say within a year of me discovering this band, it went from like, no, I've never heard of that stupid fucking sounding band, Caroline, to you like that stupid fucking band, Caroline.
Yeah, exactly. Because I went from listening, I worked in Boots the Chemist, and then I went to work in a pub across the road where it was full of actual indie men. So I was trying to impress them with my Maroon 5 knowledge. Yeah. And they were just like, oh, I can't believe you like that. And then it became a little bit of like my shameful secret where I didn't talk about it, but I just listened to it every lunch hour still. Like,
yeah, it's so funny, isn't it? How like, I suppose another comparison would be a band like Mumford & Sons, which is a band that went instantly from no one knowing them to being incredibly popular and everyone hating them within about 9 months of their conception.
And I think the same happened with The Killers' Hot Fuss, because I remember someone in that same pub introduced me to The Killers and was like, oh, you'll like this band. Then 6 months later, he was erasing history and acting like I was the loser for liking The Killers.
Erasing history. It's funny because I think that we really came of age during this great churn of music. And like, I think maybe now it's slightly different because people listen to Spotify and they listen to one song off a band and then it's kind of more drip fed to them.
Yeah.
And the idea of there being huge albums by guitar led bands is not as much of a thing anymore.
It's not as much of a thing. And actually, Adam Levine is currently getting slagged off a lot because he just said there's not many bands anymore. And loads of bands have been like, we're a band, Adam Levine. Like, what are you on about?
But he's right.
But I think that's kind of what he must have meant. He just phrased it. You phrased it better than Adam.
But like, he's like, I think he's a very hateable person now. I think what's happened with Adam Levine is very similar to the James Corden effect.
Yeah.
It's like, when I think of both of those people, I think of like, I remember you when you were young and full of feeling and you seemed to really identify with like humanity and sensuality. Gavin and Stacey, you could line up next to songs about Jane of being like, look at you being a person.
Look at you just being yourself, writing about this girl you met in a gas station, having a nice time.
Yeah, exactly. Writing about these nice people in Wales and Essex.
Yeah.
And then it seems like their ambition and their sort of, you know, they've had this never-ending chase for fame that is never sated because the stakes, they just keep making the stakes bigger for themselves. And then they have slowly gone from being recognisable human beings to being like someone who looks like they co-host the Hunger Games talk show in the off-season. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of shiny, the capital
gone,
look,
yeah.
You know?
I saw them once at O2. And he played tracks from Songs About Jane, and no one stood up. It was just me dancing, having a lovely time.
What?
And then he played Songs About Jagger, and the whole place.
Songs About Jagger. Songs About Jagger.
Songs About Jagger. Oh my god! Why is that song?
That's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Moves like Jagger.
Songs about.
He should have done Songs About Jagger.
That makes more sense.
Makes much more sense. God, this is how obsessed I was on their biggest hit. I can't even name it.
It's funny because just before we started this podcast, you warned me sometimes that you get excited.
I do.
And then you lose the names for things. And here it is.
Here it is. Songs About Jagger.
Yes.
But everyone got up with Songs About Jagger. And, and he just looked dead inside. Like, I saw his eyes just go like,
yeah.
Oh, this is who I am now. And all those tattoos look like a Snapchat filter of himself. Yeah. Like, it's so...
It's so fake.
Yeah.
It's so hard to take in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get to like a sort of track-by-track listing.
Okay.
But first off, I kind of want to talk about what this album is about in the wide. Which, you know, it's an album about a relationship, but it's an album about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, someone like who, obviously there was sex chat happening in music in the noughties, and I think most of it was happening in R&B. I think most of it was happening like Usher, Ashanti, artists like that, who were having like very like sensual R&B hits. But for whatever reason, I wasn't drawn to R&B.
No.
I was very much about guitar music and indie music.
Well, that's just because I can't move my hips when dancing, so I just had to get away from
that's
R&B.
The thing about R&B is if you're a shit dancer,
yeah,
it really reveals you very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're just a very like long white girl.
Floating about, yeah, no.
Yes, and you could sort of hide yourself with indie music much more, couldn't you? But for me, I mean, I feel like the sort of miniature thesis of this season of the podcast is about what the noughties were like for girls growing up. And I feel like it is one of the most conservative times for women. And what I mean by that is that there was a huge rush of sexual content, but all of it was, and it was very, very, what's the word, explicit. Like, it was the age of the celebrity porn tape. It was,
yeah.
Which I saw all of them because I had brothers and they were like, oh,
yeah,
this kind
yeah.
of thing.
I've watched the long version of the Pamela and Tommy Lee one, like the 20 minutes.
Which, one of the better ones, I think.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
The Colin Farrell one and the Pamela Anderson one are actually very tender, and all the other ones are depressing and awful.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was sort of the world of kind of male magazines, ladette culture,
yeah.
where... Basically, there was a very narrow remit for female sexuality. It had to be for sort of male titillation, and it was cloaked in shame. And it was a really confusing time to come of age, I think, because traditionally, I think the fear around female sexuality had always been around pregnancy. And by the early noughties, and the shame around sexuality has been pregnancy, by the early noughties, that was less of a thing because birth control was widely available. But what happened was... there was this intense surveillance culture because of phones, because of blogs, because of all this new stuff that was happening, because of sex tapes, that completely replaced the idea of sexuality and pregnancy, and that being the scary thing, to the idea of like just shame, just blanket shame, everyone knowing, everyone
yeah.
seeing your disgusting vagina.
Everyone's like, yeah, handing photos out in school, I remember, was like
yeah.
literal, like printed out photos of girls was handed out in school, which...
Oh yeah, and like every sort of like city or county or whatever had its own sort of like, oh, a girl is a friend of a friend of a friend. There's a grainy picture of someone sticking a Coke bottle into her. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or something. Like awful,
it was
awful.
A really grim time. Like yeah.
really, really, really grim time. And if you're like a teenage girl and experiencing desire for the first time, there really wasn't very much to tell you that it was okay. And for me, this album was that.
Yeah, it definitely does that. Because also, I mean, he's very explicit. Like, he says, like, he's got that fingers line, which got censored. I think it was taken off of the music channels.
Yeah. My pressure on your hips sink in my fingertips.
That's the one, yeah.
It's so hot. It's so, so sensual. Like, I know it's embarrassing. Yeah. It's explicitly about fingering. Yeah. It's so sexy.
It's so sexy. And the other thing I love is that actually Jane has a lot of control in the album.
Yeah.
It's not just him taking her. Like, he's trying to, like, at one point he's like, can't remember the lyric, but he's trying to please her and she cannot be, like, she cannot be pleased, or she's insatiable. She just wants more and more and more of him.
Yeah.
And, like, in Sweet's Goodbye, it's like pushing hips back and forth.
It's like, it's just pushing forward and arching back.
Arching back. Yeah. It was so hot, but I felt she was in control. It wasn't just him taking her.
And the whole kind of frame of the album is very much like, this is a relationship that's untenable, but we are so attracted to one another and the sex we have is so good
that we can't keep away from each other. Yeah.
Yeah. And that blew my mind.
I mean, it was all I wanted.
All anyone wants, even still.
Yes, still not.
Yes, and like, yeah, and it's, yeah. And yeah, the other line I always think of as well is, I can't remember what song it is on, I'm sure we'll get to it, but it's a song about having sex in the car, and he's sort of saying, as you wipe off beads of sweat, slowly you say, I'm not there yet.
Yeah, and that's the other one. It's like, she's actually owning her orgasm, which you didn't get.
It's amazing.
It's really good.
And just like, I don't know about you, but I was, as I said, 13 when this came out, and then it was sort of 14 when I was really listening to it a lot, and it was one of the 5 albums I owned. But I was somebody who was like, very dreamy and naive and like not that long out of Barbies, emotionally speaking. But at the same time, I felt very sexual and I felt like so really insatiable myself, and like I really wanted to have sex. And this was such a great thing to have in my arsenal of culture, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I was the same, because even though I was a little bit older, as I say, in school, boys just weren't interested. I didn't have that. And it was just at the time when I was working in this... working in this bar full of boys, like... thinking of myself as this sexy person and thinking of myself as Jane.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just really like being Jane.
Because she's so blank.
She's so blank. And you couldn't find her. I found her now because the internet's much more advanced. But back then, you just couldn't find her. I spent hours, I remember, just trying to figure out who this person was. Yeah. And you couldn't. And I think that was almost a blessing.
Yes. Yes, because she is so beautiful.
Yeah.
We've all seen pictures of her now. Because she was in the This Love video, right?
So, oh, was she?
That's her.
Is that her? Oh,
so he says, yeah.
Oh.
I watched a lot of interviews with him last night.
I didn't know that was her. That's even more interesting, because I've just been stalking her current Instagram.
Oh.
which has been...
And you found out some very interesting facts about it, didn't you?
Yes, I found out that she's married to this man called Mark, who I was like, he's just a plain-looking man. But then I looked him up, and
It's Mark Webb.
Yeah, he is the director of 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah.
Which I'm also obsessed with, because she's very Zooey Deschanel-like, and now he's married to her, and it's just a whole other... And now I've kind of...
Oh my God, it's a whole other layer!
It's a whole other layer that he... She's just Zooey Deschanel-like, and he's married to her. And then I got into my head that maybe, although why he would do this, he could make a movie of the songs about Jane relationship.
Oh, my God. It's so true.
Because it's just such a movie-like relationship. The one that I've made up in my head.
Of course, of course.
Is, like, I think would make a great rom-com,
But the thing is, 500 Days of Summer, I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Me neither,
and it's probably ripe for a sentimental garbage rewatch. But it is about this thing of like this man's obsession with this girl, and they've got this huge amount of chemistry, but it can never really work, and he's constantly chasing her, which is what Songs About Jane is.
What Songs About Jane is about.
But then I suppose a lot of male art is. So maybe we're being generous.
Just like linking them.
So the first track on the album is Harder to Breathe.
So Harder to Breathe is actually my least favourite
really?
Of all the songs. And I was reading that it's the one that he says isn't about Jane, but I believe it is about Jane, because I believe it's when he got arrogant, because in my head he pursued Jane in high school. She was the hotter one. Mm-hmm. Then he got, there was always a power imbalance in their relationship. And Hard to Breathe is when he's like, do you know what? I'm fucking good in bed. you want me.
Yes. Okay. So I think it's about, so he, so what I discovered last night and what blew my mind was that Adam Levine maintains that this song is about him, because the relationship was breaking up at the same time the band were going into the studio. So it was sort of this real push and pull time for them, and about going in, and it's about pressure from the record label to make more songs, to make the album longer. That's what he says it's about. And as someone who's currently under book deadline, I find that very resonant. So that opening verse of, how dare you say that my behaviour is unacceptable, so condescending, unnecessarily critical, I have the tendency of getting very physical. And then this sort of thing of, you know, you're not fit to fucking tread the ground that I'm walking on. It's so just the creative's arrogance of like, leave me alone.
And also, I'm really glad to learn this, because the Watch Your Step or You're Going to Need a Miracle, I got a bit worried. I was like, is this a bit domestic abuse-y? Yeah. It doesn't quite fit in. It doesn't play into my narrative of what their relationship was like. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because that does sound quite aggressive.
This is very aggressive.
Just, yeah, to start this like big emotional love album. Yeah. Like, I'll fucking hit you, you bitch.
Yeah, exactly. No, I wanted. No.
It's about the record suits.
It's about the records. Yeah.
But yeah, this then to cut from that sort of like frustrated, like, I think to begin an album about the, and have it be about the creative, you know, frustrations of making the album is quite cool.
Oh, that's very clever. Yeah.
Yeah, and then to cut to this chorus of like, is there anyone out there? Because it's getting harder and harder
to breathe.
But that thing, I, you know, I relate. I relate to it, because there is that thing of like, when you feel your profile getting suddenly bigger. Like, you do feel like you're being crushed a bit.
Yeah. And now he's so crushed.
<I know. laughs>
I'm so worried for him.
Yeah. It's really the song that should be coming out now.
Yeah, it really should be.
Sort of claustrophobic sense. Yeah. And I think what's so important, what sort of nailed it as a sex album very early on, is this thing of, it's the breathing.
Yeah. The
yeah. And just looking at that lovely we just have to talk, because if we don't get out of the way now, we're going to keep coming back to it. Just how attractive he is.
He's just so, so gorgeous. And I feel he just grew from first to second. So, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about the second album, but in the second album is when I think he reached his peak. And then I think it's because I grew with him as well.
Yeah.
But the cheekbones, at the time, he just was that like innocent rocker, but who would treat you badly at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, he looks like somebody, how like a YA hero would be described.
Yeah.
The sort of kind of skinny, like the very pale skin, the black hair, the big eyebrows. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just my dream of what a man should look like.
Me too, really. Yeah. And again, I projected him on, because I look back, all these boys I fancied, and I thought they looked like him.
Yeah.
And I look back and I'm like, they didn't.
They didn't look like him.
They really didn't. You were really, really projecting.
Oh, so good. Okay, is there anything else on Harder to Breathe that you...
No, I don't think so.
You don't rate it?
I don't rate it. It's, I like a little bit more now that I know it's not about Jane, but it's just because it never fitted into my Jane narrative.
And that's the main thing. Okay. I imagine this love fits very well into your Jane narrative.
Oh, yeah, because that is the breakup song. Yeah. And I remember I used to go... There was a Valentine's compilation album out at the time.
Good.
Called This Love, that used This Love in the adverts. And I remember like screaming at the television, being like, listen to the lyrics. That is a breakup song.
Oh my God.
This
so
should not
incensed.
Be on the Valentine's
Only I
album.
Understand
yeah. what this is about.
That song means so much to me for so many reasons. But like that, the way it just comes in with that piano, the bum, 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 bum. It's just like sonically, I don't think anything really sounded like that at the time. Obviously, I think that Maroon 5 were referencing a lot of like old school soul and R&B, like Stevie Wonder and Barry White, I think was something they listed. And Lauryn Hill was obviously more contemporary. But that was... That intro and the video with all the oranges and all that kind of stuff was really beautiful to me. But it was also, I was learning to play guitar at the time.
Ah.
And This Love, you can't play This Love without learning bar chords. And I don't know if you know guitar at all.
Not at all, no. I mean, I don't really know much about, like, I'm such a lyric person.
Yeah.
When people talk about the melodies, or is melody even the right word?
Yeah, I guess.
I'm just like, oh yeah, that is a good point about the song.
No, so I'm generally that person too, but for so, I think because I've just listened to this so much. Mm-hmm. So a bar chord is when you have to put your entire finger across the neck of the guitar, hold down every string, and then make a chord shape with the other fingers.
I mean, that is hot that Adam Levine can do.
It's hot that Adam Levine can do that. I agree. And up until that point, I only knew how to do sort of open-faced chords, which is like the, you know, the ones that you see or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was so horny for this song and needed to be able to play it so I could connect with Adam that I learned how to do bar chords. And they're like, if you're a little girl, yeah, as which I was, it was the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life up until that point. It was the first thing I determinedly tried at, because it's so painful on your poor little fingies.
Oh. Did it for Adam.
I did it for Adam.
Somewhere he knows.
I think he does. I think that, like, honestly, I felt a feeling so strong to make the shapes in the guitar. And so yeah, that really, it really kicked up my musicianship.
There we go.
Fancying that man.
Yeah. How's the guitar now?
I don't really play anymore.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
It's interesting to me because that video was so controversial, I think.
Yeah, because that was the one that he was saying that they had to cut a lot of the lyrics from and replace them. And it was intentional of him to make the lyrics so sexual because he was sick of people just being like, ooh,
baby. Yeah. Which I really respect from a really young artist.
Yeah.
Because he's right, because there was a lot of sex in songs, but a lot of it was like, come up to my bedroom.
Yeah, and like, then just cut off.
Yeah, close the door, that's it, kind of thing. And the explicit references to fingering.
Which I read in an interview, he said, I loved it because I know it would drive my ex-girlfriend wild. Which is another thing I just love about this album is the story of him releasing it and her listening to it and him thinking about her. And it's just another layer of the album that I'm obsessed with. And I was trying to figure out if he'd written any songs about Behati Prinsloo, his current wife, and I can't really find any. And I just wonder if she's just like, where's my album?
I know.
I checked to see whether Behati Prinsloo follows Jane on social media, and she doesn't. I even checked to see if she followed Jane's denim brand, because I thought that would be
a clever way of her stalking Jane without Adam knowing.
I'm obsessed with you. I just love the jeans.
The denim brand.
But she doesn't. So.
Oh my God. And like, yeah, and I remember very clearly there was a daytime edit of that video as well of there being kind of flowers over it. Do you remember that?
Yes. Like kind of washing.
Yeah.
The screen.
Yeah. And that was sort of, but if you watch the sort of unedited version, you can see sort of more of their like hips and their arses.
It's just so, I just always think that the thing about Adam is, about Adam.
Our friend Adam. Our boyfriend.
I felt at the time, I don't think he gives this off now, but I always felt at the time that he is someone who just loved all women and loved women's bodies and wouldn't shame you. I got this feeling as someone like with a belly, with a bum, even though he was dating a lot of models at the time.
Yeah.
That Adam would go with me. Like, I just got that feeling that he just loved women. I get the same feeling from Harry Styles, that kind of just respect for women from him, which made him very sexy. And it came across quite well.
Yeah. He seems like the kind of guy who would watch you get ready
for a night
out. Do you know what I mean? Who'd be kind of very interested of like, oh, what are you doing now?
What are you doing now?
Which is like, he just seems very like, very respectful and very worshipy of women.
Worshipy of women, which of all, women of all like sizes, like everything. I just always got that from him back then.
Which is mad considering that he's only dated women of like a very traditional beauty standard to still give off that
to
vibe.
To give off that vibe. I don't know how he's done it. But I mean, I don't think he does it now.
Yeah. No.
I wouldn't get in a bikini in front of Adam Levine now.
No. No, I think he would like come up to me and be like, you know, if you just eat less protein or whatever, you can look like this.
He's quite a gym bro now.
Yeah, and he's always talking about how yoga is good for sex, and I'm like, that you've overcooked it.
Yeah, exactly.
But to go back to him seeming like he has a huge amount of desire for all kinds of women, I was watching a lot of very old interviews with him and Jesse Carmichael, who was kind of the other main co-writer and his sort of childhood best friend. And, you know, that's the thing about Maroon 5. All those lads have been together since they were 14.
Yeah.
In Cara's Flowers.
In Cara.
Which all super fans know about. But they were on one of those stupid, like, very early noughties, like the AOL Music Hour or something. And they were asking him all these quickfire questions. And they went, celebrity crush. And he went, Diane Lane.
Oh, wow.
Like, who at that point was in her, you know, mid-40s, like, and not like a huge actress. He was like, I just think she's so sexy.
Oh, I love
that.
Isn't that
great?
That's really great. That's really added more to Adam.
It really has. Like for a 22-year-old guy, she'd be like, Diane Lane, like, is amazing to me. I know I'm giving him too much credit because obviously she's a beautiful woman. Yeah. And then, like, in the She Will Be Loved video, he talked about how he wanted to get Kelly Preston in and he thought she was so gorgeous. Like, he said this real, like, horny love for, like, mummies.
Yo. I really respect that.
I know. Yeah, it's very hot.
Love.
All right. Going right on to yet another boning song, which is Shiver.
Shiver. Do you know, I counted the number of times he talks about sex in this album, fresh references, and it's only actually 11 in the whole album.
Like 11 explicit references
explicit
to sex.
References to sex. Well, I thought it'd be more.
Huh.
Anyway, this is just a little fat die.
So shiver when you hear you. I shiver when I hear your name. Think about you, but it's not the same. The thing about these songs as they go on is that a lot of there are so many references musically. I know you're not really, as you say, a melodies person, but they do sound like they're referencing like Lenny Kravitz or Prince, but also like the Backstreet Boys. Like, I think Shiver is very much one of those songs. That delivery of, shiver when I hear your name. It feels like you can see like NSYNC doing like
a little
an
like,
elbow.
Yeah, or like a
shimmy.
Shiver.
Yeah. You can imagine like a big video of them with the puppet strings and all that kind of thing. And to go back to all those interviews I was watching last night, one of those quickfire questions that they were getting after the Who's Your Celebrity Crush, and they said, well, what's the biggest misconception about Maroon 5? And he just said that we're not a real band. And he was like, yeah, like people think we're a boy band. And he's like, he was like, yeah, and he was kind of shrugged. He's like, there's elements of us to that of that to us, but so were the Beatles. I find that really horny.
Really, I mean, everything about the way he thought about what he was going to do and making, I remember I read one where he said that he wanted these lyrics to feel really, really, really real.
Yeah.
And then all the band members were like, yeah, we need him to go through like another insane up and down relationship.
Like, it's very, a very old school, very romantic view of creation, isn't it? Yeah. Because, like, you know, we're both authors, we're both writers. Like, honestly, I've never had a situation where it's like I went through a really dramatic thing and then the thing
and
that I based all of it on and there's references to my real life in it. Like, that just doesn't happen. I just sit down and do it.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's loads of things that I read in again, because in my head, Shiver is basically they got together at high school, then they went away on like a gap year each, and Shiver is him. They're apart at this point of the relationship, and he can't stop thinking about her. But I'm sure it's just like, it's like when I write characters, I'm blending all these different experiences together, and he will be doing the same. Because he only says that there's like lyrics in each song related to Jane, whereas for me, everything is Jane.
Yeah. So. Yeah, because that makes everything about you.
Yeah, yeah, because he shivers when he hears my name and he thinks about me and it's not the same.
I love girls. you're so right. Everything is Jane.
Yeah, everything is Jane.
Everything is Jane. We talked slightly about She Will Be Loved already, but it was almost my, it was always my least favourite song on the album.
Oh, it's the song I want played at my funeral.
Why?
Right. One, because my friends say that when they hear this song, I think because they knew how much I love Maroon 5 and it was one of the ones that was played a lot on the radio, but also because it helps me rewrite my history as this mysterious
beauty queen of
who's got troubles with herself. I don't have troubles with myself.
I'm a very straightforward woman.
I just always fantasize the idea of, like, you know, around this time, all rom-coms.
Yeah.
Women are like huffy and they're a bit mean when they first meet men, and then the men win them over. And I am extremely polite.
You're delighted upon first impression. This is the first time we've met. I'm very charmed.
I'm just very polite. I'm not rude to people. But yeah, I fantasize about being one of these people with a straight fringe and who's rude. And I mean, not saying that all people with fringes are rude.
I mean, there's definitely enough evidence out there.
And She Will Be Loved played into what I wanted to be. And again, it played into this idea that if someone loved me that much, they would be... I love the like idea of like, he's there anytime she wants him. Like for... Yeah. This is kind of, for me, a less sexual song. It's more like he's there for problems. She can call him anytime she wants. I mean, he does sit in the car and, like, watch her house, and it's a bit creepy. But it just, to me, symbolised what true love was. And in a way, I mean, I'm married now to a very nice man. We don't have, like, an up and down... But we just didn't have that. But, I just wanted that so badly, and I used to just listen to it and think that this boy that worked in this theatre with me had written it for me, and it just really elevated that. I love crushes. I love having crushes so much.
Have them all the time. Keep you going.
Yeah, they keep keep my relationship going. Like I love to invest my imagination into that crush more than the crush itself. And this song for me was my crush on this boy that worked in the theatre. And as I say, he just was Adam Levine, this boy.
I love this so much. It's so sweet. And I completely know what you're saying as well, because I'm the same. I'm like very much, I've always been a serial monogamist. I've never been, I remember this conversation I had with Dolly once, and she was kind of moaning about being single or something, and I was like, you know, men want to kiss you on top of the Eiffel Tower and men want to fart on the sofa with me. Don't think I don't wish I was you sometimes. You know what I mean? Men do not want to kiss me on top of the Eiffel Tower. They want to stand at the base of the Eiffel Tower and complain how expensive it is to get up there.
But it's not worth it. I've heard it's bad.
No, I mean, I know what you're saying. Like, I've always felt like such a girl next doory type, and that's kind of my appeal. That's who I am, and I'm just like a soft lady. And like, but I would love to be like a complicated woman that a man will be there for, regardless of what she does, because I see the real you underneath that harsh exterior.
That exactly. Like, I will go and I will sit and I will watch street buskers and sit and just imagine that street busker falling in love with me, just like. And it's just a nice way to spend my lunch hour.
I have such a crush on you after this. This is so dear to me. I love this. All right, we have to get through all these songs, man.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Next one is Tangled, and I love Tangled.
Oh, I love Tangled. And Tangled to me, sorry, I don't know if this is in any way interesting.
This is fabulous. You are the perfect guest, because you are only sincere emotions, which is exactly what we go for here.
So Tangled to me is not actually about Jane. It's about the girl he cheats on Jane with, and she's got tangled in the web. And she's innocent,
that's good.
Has got tangled in the web of him, and he's using her. Whenever Jane rejected him, he'd go running to this girl, which I can just imagine. I think it happens a lot. I'm not Jane. I probably am the girl entangled, the one who just
I completely agree with this reading. This is absolutely canon. Yes, this is exactly it, because there's this thing of like, there's this idea you get from this both Adam Levine character in this album or whatever, of like, he is somebody who's kind of giving the best of himself and putting his best foot forward all the time in this completely untenable relationship, and is storing this great mass of resentment and irritation and frustration the more he tries to make it work with this mythical Jane, and that all of that energy is just being like fucking splunked on some random woman.
Some poor girl who thinks like he's just really hot. I mean, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she is just an innocent caught in his web, and
You really do. I really always do imagine it, of just like the kind of like hideous, like borderline emotionally abusive fuckboy relationship would be, like, you up and him just like come up to her flat and banging her and like saying two nice things and leaving.
Yeah, and then afterwards being like, oh, I feel so guilty about this, you must leave. Yeah. And it's like, well, maybe you should stop calling me at 4 a.m. Like, you do have a choice in this, Adam.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You say you're using her, but do just stop calling her. Let her get on with her life.
Yeah,
she's really obsessed with you.
And he really wants her to be strong enough to be able to stop taking those calls, but at the same time he's like, I need this,
yeah. And he needs to, and then every now and then he like goes to a party with her, rubs her in Jane's face. Jane's got someone hotter there, because Jane is also, I think, a bit of like a fuckboy in this relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
They just messed each other around.
Oh, very good. So good about this. Okay, great. Oh, also, I want to mention here a nice factoid.
Ooh.
There's some backing vocals on this track.
Yes!
As there are many tracks, and it's by 1, 2, 3, Rashida Jones.
That blew my mind.
Rashida Jones.
How?
Thing is, she is Quincy Jones' daughter. So I guess she was doing some music bits. I'd say she was interning at the label, maybe?
Yeah, I think she was interning at the label and just got called in to go like, ooh.
Yeah, or maybe they were friends with her, because like, the thing about...
Maybe Rashida was the girl entangled. Maybe he was using her to get back at Jane.
Because the thing is, even though Rashida Jones is really beautiful, she's one of us.
She's one of us. She's very
polite. She's at the base of the Eiffel Tower being told it's too expensive to go to the Eiffel Tower.
And she's in the recording booth being like, guys, I'm really excited about this. This is exciting, isn't it? Ooh, what's that microphone? Ooh. Whereas Jane would just be like, yeah, microphone.
You're so right. I don't know why I feel like I have the right to relate to Rashida Jones. Like, child of a rock legend, woman.
She does that very well. That is a skill of hers.
Yeah, very, very, very beautiful. Then we've got The Sun. I love The Sun.
I love The Sun. The Sun was the song that I would say to the boys in the bar, but have you listened to The Sun? Because that is, like, I just thought that was also just a really cool, cool song. And I still love it. It's so... even though I was listening to lyrics, I was like, oh, also, I love Sex You Slipped Into My Coffee.
Yeah.
I love that. I don't really know what he means by his mama's advice.
I think, and I know, as you said, you're not really a melodies person. Sorry, I keep bringing you back to this, but it's more a way of
my
own.
It was good for me to learn, though, because I like I've overanalyzed the lyrics to too much of an extreme degree.
The story of Maroon 5 is that they were this very straightforward indie band, and they were all from California, from very sort of very rich backgrounds. They all had I don't think they had famous parents, but I think they were all owned businesses. Seems to be the vibe, and they kind of often refer in interviews to their very privileged background. And then two of them, Adam and Jesse, I think, went to university in New York, and they were sort of exposed to black music for the first time, and they were exposed to rap and Lauryn Hill and all these Motown hits or whatever. And then they started infusing that into their music. Then they got a new band member, and they renamed as Maroon 5. It was a totally different take. And even if the few kind of bits of Kara's Flowers that still remains, you can see how it was a huge departure. And I do think The Sun is like a direct, like, it feels like the most like a soul song.
It does, yeah. It feels quite different. Like,
yeah. And the and mama, now, I've been crying, like referencing
how they used to be. Yeah, she says the battle's almost won, but we're only several miles from the sun.
It feels like very euphemistic. It feels very churchy.
Yeah.
It feels like, and like, you know, referencing your mama and stuff. Like it feels like it's taken from sort of soul music and blues. And it's interesting because, like, I think there is this like question around like cultural appropriation with Maroon 5, because they do borrow these references like really heavily, but I think it's, you know, always, quite, in this album at least, I don't listen to their other stuff, it's very respectfully done, and they always very much, they've always been shouting at the references all the time. They've never tried to pretend like they've come up with any of this for the first time.
I'm really upset with myself because there is a record shop which had a really hot man that worked in the record shop, another one of my many Adams who didn't pay any attention to me, and I really wanted to buy this on vinyl, but then all the other boys got in my head about it not being cool enough, so I didn't buy it.
No.
And now I hear it's a great collector's item.
Really?
And I could have had
it. I see that, yeah.
But
sorry.
They let boys' stupid voices and rewriting of history. I mean, no boy introduced me to this.
No boys like this.
No boys like this.
None of them.
I think it's jealousy.
Yeah.
I think they're jealous of Adam.
I agree. Let's burn through the rest of these because we're slightly running out of time. Okay, then we've got Must Get Out. I think it's the weakest song on the album.
It is, yeah. And he's just too angry in it. And I don't really actually believe his emotion very much.
No, I'm lifting you
I'm putting you down. Yeah, he is putting us down with that bit.
Yeah, it feels like middle of the road, like easy listening rock station.
Yeah, it's definitely one I skipped quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And didn't really fit that much into my narrative of the story. So,
so therefore, functionally useless to me.
Completely useless.
Sunday Morning, which was the third single. And I love Sunday Morning still.
I love Sunday Morning, yeah. And it's it is, again, like the walking home from school one. It is just being in
just
your house. It's a nice and listening to it on a Sunday morning. And it to me expresses in their fictional relationship, him going away traveling or wanting to leave her, and I like the like he says, like, he if he could leave knowing she'd always be there, he would, and them always being there for each other, which I did read they are still friends, so maybe he achieved that despite not following each other on social media.
I think the thing about Sunday Morning, It in the story of the album, it's this thing of like this rare moment of like softness and domesticity and comfort and like niceness. It's like still some covers, and it feels like this rare moment within this very tumultuous relationship where they're able
they're
to
just
be normal.
Happy, yeah,
and it's like if we could have this all the time,
then
it'd be great. We'd have no problems.
I mean, maybe this is why there are no songs but Be Hattie Prinsloo, because it just is Sunday morning with her all the time.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know if you get this in your writing at all, but people often ask me when I write like romantic heroes or romantic relationships if they're based on my partner, and I'm just like, no, because there's not any drama there.
Yeah, exactly.
I just not really fancy it.
Yeah, it's all based on like little stories in my own head, and I find if I'm not making stories in my own head, I try to create drama or something in my own life. So it's why it's very good for me to always be working on a book or working on something.
Or working on a crush.
Yeah, or working on a crush, because I
That's
just need
such
it.
A good ethos.
I like to have all the drama in my head and fictional than in my real life, which I like to be very steady and Sunday morning-esque.
That's a great bit of self-knowledge. And I hope lots of people who make lots of drama for themselves are listening to this now.
Yeah, just go and write a book.
Yeah, start a fan website about Adam Levine and the
Naughties. Go and do some fan fiction, which actually I might do.
In my head, I've always seen this song and Mardi Bum by the Arctic Monkeys as being an A side and a B side, because they're both like they're both about like domestic mourning moments in failing relationships.
Yeah,
and Mardi Bum is like has that sort of like, oh for fuck's sake, kind of thing, and this is the more optimistic side of it.
This is more American side of it.
Yeah, exactly. Then we've got Secret, another sex jam.
Oh, another sex jam, which again I think is not about having sex with Jane, but when he first cheats on Jane.
Oh,
because he kind of is like, I know, I don't know you, but I want you so bad.
Yeah. Everyone's got a secret.
Everyone's got a secret.
Yeah, it's an affair song.
Yeah, it's an affair song. Yeah.
I hadn't realized before there are two women in this album.
There, yeah. Huh. And this was when he first met Rashida Jones.
Oh, I really, oh God, I've really committed that to my head now. That Adam Levine abused poor old Rashida Jones. Because they're about the same age, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck, okay. She seems happy now, though.
She does, yeah.
Then we've got Through With You.
We were just both really quiet. I can't.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to make this through with you.
It's
I am never going back to you.
It's very Must Get Out to me. It's kind of... Yeah. Of the same, it's the same anger writing, it's the same.
Yeah.
And I don't believe him, I guess. I guess that's maybe the point. He's not through with her, but.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it feels like another one of the slightly more Backstreet Boys songs.
Yeah.
Which makes it.
Well, I guess it, that little, like, synth.
Yeah.
Is it synthy?
Yeah. And it's also the thing of, like, I think what's weird about Adam Levine's vocal delivery is he sounds like someone who's being auto-tuned, but that's his natural voice.
That's it, yeah. Oh my God, he really does,
you know. And very then, odd.
Well, I don't know, they must, maybe they went out, because was auto-tune a thing? Oh yeah, because auto-tune came in with Shira's Believe, so
yes. She says she's not into melody.
Oh God, sorry, I just laughed away from the microphone. So it must have been, but I wonder if they eventually auto-tune him later or
yeah. I think that's how he sounds like.
It's just him.
That's just how he sounds. And then we go on to Not Coming Home. Don't answer the phone, pick up the phone, because I'm not coming home. And I think the most interesting thing about this song is the live setting, because it starts.
Oh,
because
it's in the, yeah, it's the screaming.
Yeah. It's the clapping or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, placed towards the end of the album. And, you know, if we're to believe Adam Levine's take on this being like he had a relationship breaking down and he also had his band getting its first big mm-hmm. break, I think this is the thing of like, it's very spiteful.
It's very spiteful, just like, yeah.
Well, okay, you never thought I was worth shit. Now I'm going to be in a huge rock band.
Yeah, it's, you know? Very Avril Lavigne and Skater Boy.
Very that.
That's what this,
yeah,
is.
Yeah, laughing at a pregnant teen.
Every single, I'm not going on to Avril Lavigne. She's so mean.
She hates other women.
Yeah, she really
I
does.
Love her. Yeah. Yeah, finally, we have the final sex jam and the final song of the album, "Sweetest Goodbye."
I love this. This was how I because this is the song that's on the Love Actually soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
It's played in the car when Colin is
talking, God of sex.
Yeah, talking about how he's going to go to America. Mm-hmm. So it was this song that on the Love Actually soundtrack that got me looking up who's this band.
Yeah,
what they're doing. And again, it's just those lyrics of like, I can't, they've completely escaped my head, but it's got that same thing that She Will Be Loved has of,
yeah,
he just loves her and he's going to come back to her. And even though they're going to live independent lives, this to me is when they're going both off in their gap years.
Okay. good.
They're still going to come back to each other. And of course, it is very sexy as well. It's
Yeah. And it is that thing of breakup sex, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, you know what? Once more for all times, you know? And this is like a friendly set. And then that sort of midway through of being like, oh, you're a fucking dirty bitch.
Yeah. Bring me closer to heart attack.
Exactly. Precisely. And that's the album.
That's the album.
I'm so glad that we went through it. I've never been able to talk so much about my love of this album. And I feel so invigorated.
Yeah, I feel very invigorated. It was really fun.
I'm like, I have some... So obviously this album came out in 2003 and it was a genuine slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the videos that sort of got teenagers' attention and then got reviewers' attention. And then because the reviewers noticed the teenagers' attention, it was just so filled with like, ugh.
Yeah, so...
So the reviews at the time, particularly the English... The American reviews were quite mild. The English reviews were so unforgiving. The Guardian... In the first few years of Maroon 5's career, were absolutely eviscerating them constantly. Like sending journalists for gig reviews and stuff, just being like, this is awful. I've got a few quotes here. the loaded young progeny of Beverly Hills families. They're also buff as personal trainers and have attracted a celebrity following that includes Natalie Portman and Kirsten Dunst. But their first album isn't as useless as one would hope. Isn't as useless as one would hope. So it's already this thing of like, these people are too attractive and too rich for us to genuinely like this. Songs About Jane is pitched at the busted market, for which their guitar mashing and surging harmonies eminently qualify them. Given a few listens, the idea of busted plus lashings of sincerity, this being a Californian band, isn't as unpleasant as you think.
Oh.
And then 6 months later, the Guardian sent a gig reviewer to their first the first English gig of the Mean Fiddler in London, and they call him James Levin. James Levin, L-E-V-I-N. James Levin can't decide if he wants to be Anthony Kiedis or Prince. Maroon 5 ends up sounding like Busted meets Cream at a Lenny Kravitz gig. They're obsessed with calling them Busted.
I mean, I loved Busted.
I love Busted. Oh yeah, here's the worst line from that review. Despite rummaging through various back catalogues like rats ravaging pizza boxes, their songs aren't bad.
So backhanded.
Awful. Was one from Rolling Stones. With James Brown-like guitar riffs to create a foundation on which Levine can obsess about beauty, brackets including his own.
Oh.
And it's this thing, and this is sort of my parting shot on this. I'm sort of obsessed with he was too beautiful to be taken seriously.
He was too beautiful to be taken seriously. And then eventually that morphed him into, I think he must have just been like, oh, well,
he swallowed
if you're never
that pill.
Gonna, if you're never going to take me seriously, then
I'm going to make as much money as I possibly can. And it's funny because when I look at bands like Coldplay, for example, who are, you know, a band who've been around forever and they went from someone who, like, people regarded as first as genuine musicians and now people make fun of. They haven't really changed. Mm-hmm. The songs just got bigger and Chris Martin had bigger collaborators. And, like, really, if you liked the stuff back then, you'll like the stuff now. That's not the same with Maroon 5. It's just, like, it becomes something that you put on at a toddler's birthday party.
Yeah, it really has.
Yeah.
And I think it's a shame because this album just, to me, what I was thinking about this morning and about how much I listened to it still and how it's been, I was shocked to learn it's been pretty much 18, 19 years.
Yeah.
And I was listening to it and still loving it and still loving those lyrics and still feeling so much with those lyrics. And I was like, it's just a shame that
it's not remembered.
It's not remembered in that way.
Yeah. And, you know, it'll be 20 years soon. And imagine if they toured it. Could we go?
Yes,
I know it's the first time we've ever met, but could we go? There's nobody
die.
Else in my life who would want to go.
I would love that so much.
Oh, so, it would be such a fun night out.
Especially if they did small venues, because...
Imagine. Oh, it'd be so good.
No, it'd be so good.
Okay, Katrina, this has been sentimental garbage. You are the author of The Matchmaker.
I am.
Tell us about that.
Oh, okay. It is really bad.
Sorry, that was a really bad segue into please tell me about your work so we can sell some copies.
It is about a matchmaker, shock, who is selling her business as a successful romantic matchmaker, but she's hiding a secret about her own relationships. And that kind of unravels in the plot, and it's kind of about heartbreak and grief, and mostly about how your friends are the loves of your life.
Oh, lovely. And you're also a poet and a journalist. You can be found at Katrina, C-A-T-R-E-E-N-A-H, I believe.
Yeah, I think there's two A's, so it's like C-A-T-R-E-E-N-A-A-H, so it's to help people pronounce my name.
You
pronounced it very well.
It's nice because I've been following you for years, I think, because of your poetry, and we've never really interacted. And then when I started posting my songs about Jane, you crawled right into the DMs. I have a whole story about what this relationship was. And I said, come on the fucking podcast.
I was so excited.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
Thank you.
This has been Sentimental Garbage, and I've been Caroline O'Donoghue. You can follow me on Twitter at Zaroline, that's C-Z-A-R-O-L-I-N-E, or email me about the podcast at sentimentalpod@gmail.com. This has been a Justice for Dumb Women podcast. Thank you to Harry Harris for the jingle, Gavin Day for the artwork, and Hannah Varro for the mixing.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.